This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This story has multiple parts. To listen to the entire story in one place, visit talltaletv.com/series.
Of Bandits and Bad Magic by Leslie Heron. Chapter 29, Salix.
The soles of Eric's boots felt suction to the riverbed with every step. Perhaps it was in response to their current situation, or maybe it was simply the guilt that weighed him down. But he couldn't stop his mind from wandering back to what the matron had said.
A demon of unimaginable strength, clad in red.
Damn it, Vil. Why must you always make things more difficult?
The words tasted hollow and empty. He had lost count of the time spent separated from his sibling, but he had no trouble imagining the sound of his gruff voice snapping a response.
If I'm such a burden to you, then why did you bring me along in the first place?
Eric rubbed away the tension in his temples, taking in a deep breath of swamp air. Why had he brought Vel along? Because they were family, and that's what family does. He scoffed at himself, finding his slow, steady pace come to a halt. The lie fell so easily from him. That wasn't the reason, despite how often he told himself it was.
It's because you can't do anything by yourself, and have been using me to clean up your messes since you were 8.
Slumping against the weight of his own failures, Eric felt himself sink further into the swamp. He could run from the truth no longer. His brother was right. They had trudged across the entire kingdom of Ebra just to negotiate with the witches to bring his brother and their rightful king back to their realm, all so that they could help them out of a mess. While it was true he had not caused it, he couldn't deny he was certainly caught up in it. How were they supposed to take on 3 joining armies without the king and his ability to control the undead hordes that wandered the forests? Or without, he laughed a little to himself, a demon of unimaginable strength clad in red? The very real possibility was that they were, all of them, going to die in the next few days.
Will you stop, Waddlewing? We're gonna drown if you keep this up.
A little startled at first, Eric snapped out of his spiraling thoughts and looked down to see he was nearly waist-deep in the thick, inky tar of the swamps.
Sorry, Wraith. I just have a lot on my mind.
He worked to free himself from the tar, moving 1 foot in front of the other until he stumbled into the wake of Bob's cleared path.
I can tell.
Eric looked over his shoulder. The giant skull of Rivaria had faded from view, and the trees had grown dark in an obscuring mist.
Hey, listen. We're probably not going to survive this war, and there's no point in you getting mixed up in it.
He pulled a face as he fought back the overwhelming feeling of facing his mortality.
The witches said they would help you cross over, if you wanted. Should I take you back?
There was a long pause, the sound of birds filling his ears, and then he was nearly thrown off his feet at the sudden pain that collided with him inside his mind.
What the hell, Wraith? Did you just slap me?
Eric blinked away the spots in his vision to see his shadow, barely visible on the black surface of the waters, glowering up at him with angry yellow eyes.
Don't be dumb. If I wanted to leave, I could have done so a bunch of times already.
Eric winced at the shadow bug's honesty and let out a long sigh through his nose.
I just didn't want to drag you into all this.
He gestured broadly at his surroundings,
I thought we were friends. Isn't this what friends do?
Eric's shadow continued to glare at him until he finally relented.
I'm sorry. You don't have to go anywhere.
He felt a tension leave his shoulders, and his shadow returned to normal. He looked up, curious as to how much longer he had to wade through impossible muck, to see something he had not been expecting. They were back at camp already. He may have been distracted, but not enough to lose that much time. When they had departed for the depths of the swamps, the sun had just begun to set in the west. But now, he could see vestiges of a pink sunrise tickling the horizon to the east. They had been gone for almost 12 hours, but it had felt like only a fraction of that time. Eagerly reaching for his bag, Eric was ready to jot down the curious nature of the swamps, when the creaking sound of splintering wood pulled his attention away. He looked over his shoulder to see the scattered clumps of trees had crept closer together until their branches began to thread with one another, bending and twisting to form a barricade of gnarled wood. Undine let out a long sigh as she lowered the queen down onto one of the nearby tree stumps that circled the dying fire.
And that is that.
She looked over at the barrier with a slight shake of her head.
They believe that by walling off the rest of the world, they will be safe from this war.
I thought I heard you lot.
Eric turned to see the flaps of a singular tent fly open and the Arcanist step out into the morning sun.
Come on, man. Will you please put on some pants?
He threw up his hands, shielding his gaze. Looking down, Atlas realized his mistake and let out a bark of laughter.
Aw, don't be a prude.
He gathered the ends of his sash and cinched them tight around his waist, securing himself from view.
You can't tell me you don't prefer sleeping in the nip.
As the Arcanist retreated into his tent to find some pants, the flap to a second, smaller tent pulled open.
You back!
After a quick glance at the smaller-than-expected group, Evan's expression soured.
I take it we didn't get the backup we was hoping for?
Eric shook his head.
You could say that.
Atlas returned, fully dressed, and flourished an unopened bottle of wine.
Well, this little beauty was originally for celebrating your successful return. But I suppose it can double as a pick-me-up.
He pulled the cork out with his teeth, spat it into the fire, and took a long drink before passing it to the false king.
It's a shame you couldn't find the others.
Eric took the bottle with a heavy sigh. He shook his head before tossing back a gulp of wine.
Oh, no. They found my brother and the king all right, but due to unforeseen circumstances, they couldn't pull them through.
Circumstances?
Evan quirked a brow.
You know Vel, unwilling to leave without a fight. Of course, it didn't help that the thing they sent to bring him back looked like Alpha.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it's been a weird day. Either way, long story short, we're on our own.
Eric passed the liquor down, handing it off to the queen. Reaching out, Pyra took the bottle and turned it over in her hands. Beneath the layer of dust, she could make out the kingdom's crest stamped into the sealing wax. The cheeky mage had swiped it from the royal wine cellar before they escaped the castle. She shook her head a little, unable to fight the smile that crept in on the edges of her mouth. She took a long draught of the drink, and was unsurprised when the alcohol did little to quell the dread welling inside her. Without Elias, it was all up to her. Eric looked around as the others climbed free from their tents. Evan's mop of disheveled blonde hair had somehow managed to reach a new level of messy, and Barry was smacking his lips between several lengthy, loud yawns. A frown creased his brow when he noticed a missing member of their party.
Where's Varen?
Hera looked up at these words, her eyes fluttering around the camp to see that the prince was, indeed, missing, as was one of the horses they had picked up at the last port. Evan jabbed a thumb over his shoulder.
After we got camp all set and the Selkies took off in their boats, he loaded up one of the ponies and just left. Didn't say why, but I got a feeling he wasn't too eager to see his brother again.
Pyra buried her face in her hands.
This is all my fault.
It wasn't Varen's fear of his sibling that had caused him to leave. He had followed the group all the way to the edge of his brother's return, stood by her despite everything, and the moment he had spoken up, she had shoved him away. She took another long pull from the wine bottle.
I failed to bring back Elias, and now I've chased off one of the few people willing to stand with me.
She hadn't realized how much his presence had been a comfort until he was gone, a small touch of stability in a chaotic time. Eric frowned again and reached over, gently resting his hand on the queen's shoulder.
Hey.
He gave it a squeeze to get her attention. When she pulled herself away and looked at him with tear-stricken eyes, he offered her a smile.
It's all right. We're all still here for you. And we'll figure this out.
Evan agreed, nodding his head several times.
What's the plan?
Slapping his hands on his thighs, Atlas turned to his companion.
Welp, I for one suggest finding a less queasy mode of travel back to Still Harbor, then booking passage on a wagon to the Enshrined Wilds.
He leaned into the tent and pulled out his hat, dropping it onto his head with a flourish.
With luck, we'll stay ahead of the carnage.
Barry gave a disgusted huff and nosed his friend hard enough to knock him back into a sitting position. Crossing his arms, Atlas quirked a brow at the bear.
What? You'd rather take on an army by yourself?
Evan jabbed him in the side.
Barry's white. We can't just leave our friends.
With a placating gesture, Eric interjected.
Those are both valid arguments, but there's no way we can tackle this army and win. If he wants to leave, I'm not gonna say no.
He turned to the tiny dwarf.
And I can't ask you to stay either. Hell, I don't even know what I'm going to do.
You know me better than that.
Evan leveled a flat look at the doctor.
You're my ticket off this planet. And besides, if I don't keep you alive, who's gonna pay me?
Pyra stood.
I want to go to Emberon.
She had just been gathering the courage to admit defeat when they all turned in her direction.
We cannot fight, but there still may be troops stationed there.
She slowly handed off the bottle of wine to her guardian.
They don't deserve to die for nothing. We may still have time to warn them.
After a long sigh, Atlas rolled his eye and nodded, begrudgingly.
And then we hightail it for the Enshrined Wilds. Agreed?
If Eric had thought the desolate swamps of the Dredgelands had offered him a glimpse into the realm of the afterlife, with its black tar waters and creatures of undeath scurrying about, he was sorely mistaken. As they crested the final rise, bringing their two-day journey to an end, the battlefield of Emberon was laid out before them. Charred, blackened remains, like the aftermath of a disastrous fire, were all that could be seen for miles. What trees remained upright were empty husks, threatening to crumble to dust on the whim of a strong breeze. There was no grass, no birds or life, and even the earth was dry and cracked. Eric stumbled to a stop at a clear edge of the blight, a perfect line where lush plant life refused to cross. Ahead, The sun's rays cast terrible, lengthy shadows across the battlefield, bringing long-dead remains of armies past into sharp relief. Swords, shields, and arrows blanketed the ground, disappearing under years of neglect. It was far worse than he had imagined, even knowing the horrendous cost that must have been paid.
"Is this..."
Eric found his voice was lost, tiny and indiscernible, as he attempted to wrap his brain around the notion of what Elias had done. The witches had said he stole something that did not belong to him. Was it the very life of the land? Undine exchanged a look with the queen, who gave a solemn nod before returning her focus to the desolate fields before her. The dryad moved to stand beside Eric.
"We were losing the war. What soldiers we had been spared died right here."
She leaned over and pulled free a filth-stained shield. She ran her hand over the front of it, brushing decades of dust from the emblem to reveal the crest of the king. A tower shield crossed by dual swords, a single star, and two feathered beasts on either side.
"In the end, only Elias and I escaped as I carried his unconscious body from the field. He sought a new ally, and after returning from the witches, he had been gifted some dark power. A force strong enough to turn the tide of the war. He raised thousands of undead, fallen soldiers from both sides, to save the entire country."
She dropped the shield back into the dirt with a long sigh.
"But the land is cursed and will never return to green."
Eric stepped over blunted swords and broken helmets.
"This must be why the Life Wardens banished him."
Undine didn't answer, but started walking deeper into the scarred land, leading Pyra's horse around the discarded obstacles.
"The fortress is not far. You can see it there if you squint."
In the distance, Eric could see the structure. But as they drew closer, he could see that it was little more than a small wooden fort. The single, simple building was barricaded behind spiked fences. There were two flimsy, makeshift lookout towers and an impressive wooden gate. Given how sun-bleached and faded everything was, the outpost was likely erected near the end of the last war. Perhaps it wasn't intended to be a permanent structure, but one to provide some relief from the elements to those that lingered. Eric let out a long sigh. Even if it was filled to the brim with soldiers, they wouldn't put so much as a dent into the approaching armies. As they neared the large wooden gate at its center, it swung open. A single, massive figure pushed the heavy lumber aside like it was nothing more than a tapestry.
"Your Majesty, we have been waiting for you."
Pyra turned to Eric, who returned her curious glance with one as equally confused. As the figure stepped out from the shadows of the building, light spilled over his frame, and she was forced to hold back a gasp. Expecting a soldier, her eyes landed, instead, on a massive humanoid bull. A minotaur. A nearly extinct race from the far west. They had been hunted by the same hordes that had driven the Selkies from their lands, but without the water to save them, the gentle creatures had nearly faded from existence. He bowed low before them, gesturing them closer. Eric squinted.
"Wait, I know you. We've met before, haven't we?"
Beneath familiar robes, he could make out heavy bandages wrapped tight around the beast's chest.
"I thought you were a priest, not a soldier."
The minotaur belted out a booming laugh.
"I am no more a soldier than you are a king."
He moved forward and clapped a meaty hand on the tiny half-elf shoulder.
But today, we both fill the roles destiny has put before us.
Nearly buckling beneath the gesture, Eric's mind raced. He would need to sell the lie in order to persuade the others to leave.
What? No! I mean, of course I'm the king!
That was not very convincing. Why does your voice squeak when you lie?
The Minotaur shrugged with feigned acceptance.
The river Selkies who spread word of your quest assured us you were not the lost king. But who am I to judge?
He removed his hand and placed it against his chest.
I am Catus, and I speak for those who come to fight.
He shifted his attention to Pyra and dropped to one knee, lowering his head.
My lady, we welcome you.
Unable to pull her attention away from the massive creature, Pyra hurried through her return gesture before the words stumbled from her mouth.
We?
Catus climbed to his feet, nodding slowly.
Yes, come, come.
He motioned for the queen and her followers to join him. Trailing after the Minotaur, Eric took one last glance over his shoulder before following the others, stumbling in the creature's massive footprints left in the dirt. Despite the rickety, haphazard construction of the outpost, inside the barrier stood a single tower that served as a storage room, a kitchen, and a war room that was also a lookout. Eric would have marveled at the feat of compact architecture had it not been for the sheer amount of fey folk, farmers, and peasants milling about inside the walls.
When the troops left, they took everything.
Catus waved to several farmers running dull blades along whetstones or sharpening wheels.
We have weapons and armor aplenty from the ruins that surround us, but for many of the fey, finding gear that fits has proved difficult.
Eric turned to see several dryads, tall as Ondine, pulling apart sun-cracked leathers and stitching them together to form makeshift armor.
We craft what we can, but the process is slow.
Tiny wood sprites flitted about his head before zooming off to the nearest table, dumping armloads of feathers into small wicker baskets.
We have many who wish to help, but none of us are soldiers.
Catus leaned over a table, peering into the buckets to pull free a single arrow.
Some who cannot fight help with provisions or finding the necessary tools or items.
Evan jumped onto the nearest box to see a handful of several hairy pygmies fletching arrows before tossing them into a bucket. He frowned as he continued to scan about the crowded area. There were dark-skinned selkies cinching quivers to straps or hammering out dents in abandoned scabbards. A half-snake woman was moving between the others, handing out small fruits and apples. He was ready to inform Eric that he had seen many of these people before, when the door to the outpost flew open and a familiar carved ram skull appeared, followed by a stout dwarf with an impressive, ashen, imperial beard.
Boshill?
Oh, my friends, you have arrived.
The troopmaster let out a bellowing laugh before he threw his arms around the king's middle and squeezed.
I did not think we would see one another again. I am pleased this is not the case.
I remember this guy. I like him.
Eric struggled to suck in a breath, his body still mending from his ordeals with the witches and the war council. But he managed to tap gently on the dwarf's back.
It's good to see you too. But what are you guys doing here? You didn't come for me, did you?
As much as I like you, no.
Bozil relinquished the king and turned to the queen instead.
We heard of Her Majesty's plight and felt moved to show our respects. And of course, Goran and Nadija would be resentful if I deprived them the opportunity to fight.
Atlas perked up at the mention of his Onyx goddess. Nadija's here. Maybe we should stick around for a bit.
Pyra looked distraught.
I appreciate your eagerness, but you have no reason to stay. The true king remains in exile.
Katus and Bozil exchanged a look before the troopmaster bowed.
With respect, Your Majesty, we did not rally for the king. It was not he who fought for our kind, who kept the wolves from our throats these last decades. You have done more than you know for us. We rally for you and the home that you have given us.
Tears mingled in Pyra's eyes. They clung to the scraps she had drawn from Lucien. She noticed their postures dip, and she raised a hand.
Do not bow. I have served you poorly as a queen. I have no power in the courts.
Bending the knee, Katus lowered his head.
Your citizens know full well what type of man the Regent Lord is, and while he may hold the power of law, he does not hold the hearts of the people.
Pyra's lips slowly pulled into a sad smile. She was not so alone after all, but it was still too late.
Your words warm my soul, truly, but as your queen, I ask that you flee this place. The battle to come cannot be won by so few.
Bozil scoffed.
Maybe not in a week's time, but right now, I'd say we stand a decent chance.
Evan raised an eyebrow.
What's that supposed to mean?
Come, look for yourself.
Katus led them to one of the two rickety guard towers. The stairs creaked and groaned under his impressive weight, but he gestured to the top.
The enemy is coming from all over the continent. Only a few companies of men have arrived so far.
As they reached the landing, the Minotaur gestured at a spyglass erected to point westward.
We estimate only a few hundred troops.
Pulling his glasses down, Eric pushed the telescope against his eye and squinted out into the battlefield. Different colored banners had been erected, but the closest was one of black with a gold feather across an open book. Of course the Brotherhood was leading the charge. They were close enough to observe, but kept their distance to avoid retaliation.
And how many troops do we have?
Troops?
Bozil barked a dry laugh and teetered his hand side to side.
None. But you do have roughly 50 men and women willing to fight, more if you count non-combatants.
Not great odds. Eric sighed, wishing his brother was here. What would Vel do? His brother always knew how to handle a fight or punch through a problem. He chuckled a little to himself. He, on the other hand, had only survived these past few months by luck and bluff alone. He was useless when it came to brute strength. But Vel was not here to save the day. Eric had to stop thinking about their situation in those terms. There would be no cavalry coming. There was no king, no undead army, and certainly no unbeatable force headed their way to save the day. It was just them, and a choice they had to make. Stand and fight, or flee and watch as the country bled. The question wasn't what would Vel do, it was what could he, Eric, do? After a moment, he looked up at Bozil, a smile starting to form on his face.
I think I have an idea.
Of Bandits and Bad Magic is book 3 of the ongoing series by Leslie Heron. Tune in every few weeks to hear the latest chapter as it's being written. If you'd like to listen to books 1 and 2, you can find links in the description.
So, Wicker Witches.
Come on, man. I'm trying to sleep.
Right. It's just, what do you think they look like?
I don't know. Just ask Eric when he gets back.
You see, at first I was thinking, they live in a swamp. A swamp! They're probably as ugly as Barry. But then I realized, them fine rides be using mud on their faces to keep their skin all smooth and creamy. So, swamp? Mud? Maybe?
You know, I think I'm just gonna go sweep outside.
You sure? The conversation was just getting interesting. Evan! Oh, thank the goddess. Took forever to get rid of him. Now I can air out the old fruit basket. All right, like you're one to talk.